Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. This is Sean Garner, an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson, in studio with Adam Hanson, Cody Beeson, Martin Felix, and Thomas Sparks. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
So we are attorneys. We do estate planning. Just as a disclaimer, we don't know anything about women's basketball or many of the topics that we talk about on this show. But if you want to listen to a lot of middle-aged white men disgruntled about the government and the general proceedings and the national policy today, then this is a show for you. Today we're going to talk about women's basketball. And that's something that I would never have considered speaking about 6 months ago. I had no clue what was going on with women's basketball other than the Brittany Griner issue being held in Russia for smoking pot or having a vape and being traded for an arms dealer. I think that was a pretty fair trade. Nonetheless, she's back. She's back in the WNBA. And the new talk of the town is Caitlin Clark. Now, if you haven't heard of Caitlin Clark's name, you've been living under a rock. Even though the WNBA hasn't been the popular sport that, you know, most people go out and spend their evenings watching. But Caitlin Clark has brought a new flair to the sport. In fact, the last two games that she played for Iowa were the most watched games in NCAA history, basketball history. And that's coming from somebody that went to Kentucky. I graduated from Kentucky, and I'm a big basketball fan. I watched more Caitlin Clark games this season than I watched Kentucky games. So what is going on with Caitlin Clark? Why is there so much hate out there for her? And I guess the question is there actually hate, or is this just snowflakes that are getting overly offended by somebody that's just getting into the league and having to earn their stripes?
Now, I think it's a relatively small group. Most of the people that I meet personally and you want to talk about basketball, they have nothing but good things to say about Caitlin Clark. She's a really good player. She's doing a lot of good things for the league. I think that's the general perception, but there is a loud minority who really despise her for reasons we can talk about.
So she's played about a dozen games by now, and in the WNBA, she was the number one pick in the WNBA draft, and for good reason. She's got a lot of accolades here. I'm going to read a couple of them. She was the NCAA D1 all-time leading scorer. She was a D1 single-season three-point record holder. She was a D1 single-season point record holder, D1 three-point leader. She had the most points, assists, three-pointers, and threes in any NCAA tournament history. Three-time NCAA season scoring leader. She didn't play all four seasons. She got drafted as a junior. She was a three-time NCAA season assist leader. I could go on and on. I've got 20 of these stats here, but she's holds the record for the most points scored in a single season and the most points scored of any college basketball player. So she's pretty good. It's not just that she's a white, straight female, and that seems to be the sticking point for a lot of these news headlines. Isn't there a headline that specifically says that, actually? I thought, Adam, you came up with one YouTube headline. Is Caitlin Clark so popular because she's a white, straight female?
Yeah, and so the context for me is the WNBA has been around for, I think, 22 years. Nobody knows that or we don't care.
Yeah.
Nobody cares, to be honest, about the WNBA until 2 months ago when Caitlin came onto the floor. I started watching Caitlin because of their deep run into the NCAA tournament 2 months ago, and specifically the Iowa-LSU game came up because Iowa and LSU, Angel Reese, was on the other side of the ball from Caitlin, and for LSU.
She was the MVP and reigning NCAA champion team.
She's black. I guess we have to say that to give context.
And beautiful.
And Caitlin Clark is white. And so that's going to play into a lot of the discussion that we have on this topic. So anyway, rewinding about 2 months ago, I in my life, I had never given a lot of attention to women's basketball. As I watched here and there, if a WNBA game happened to be on at a restaurant that I was at or something like that, I might glance up and look at it and laugh, you know, how funny, look at them. They're trying to be like the NBA guys. But that was about it, you know. Nobody really took it seriously. When I watched Caitlin Clark 2 months ago in that deep run for Iowa, I was mesmerized. It was so fun to watch. I held my breath every time she had the ball in possession. I wanted to see what was going to happen.
There was a flair of Steph Curry.
Yeah, she is just beautiful to watch. The way that she moves with the ball, the things she does with the ball, her recognition, the way she can dish it off or shoot it way deep. I mean, she's shooting from like half court.
From the parking lot.
From the parking lot. And she drains it all the time. Like, this is a phenomenon, and it's super fun and entertaining to watch. That's what I want to see. I want to see beautiful game play. That's what I loved about Michael Jordan. That's what I loved about the Chicago Bulls and a lot of those players in the 90s that we all watched growing up and just envied. And we tried to emulate those guys on our own, you know, playground. We would act like MJ. We would act like Larry Bird. And we would try to emulate that. I found myself watching Caitlin Clark in the same way, with the same excitement that she gave to me like those players did. There's another player for Minnesota in the NBA that gives me kind of the same excitement. He looks a lot like Michael Jordan in his play.
Yeah.
And so the same thing, like, that got me interested in this year's playoffs because I love watching him. He moves a lot like Jordan. And so we like, I think, personally, we like to watch good players, and it's exciting to us to see what they can do.
Well, everybody loves a phenom, somebody that just breaks the mold as far as the talent, the level of talent. And she does it. It's not she's a good WNBA player. She's just a fantastic player in general. And so let's go to the most trusted news source that we have on the issue, and that is The View.
Well, so let's rewind. Two weeks ago, Caitlin played Angel Reese, now in the WNBA.
Yeah, so this is a highly anticipated game.
I mean, we're talking right off the heels of the NCAA tournament. These girls get drafted in the WNBA within weeks of that ending of the tournament, and now they're playing in the professional leagues. And so Angel Reese squared off against Caitlin Clark. Angel Reese is on the she plays for Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago Sky.
And Caitlin now is with Indiana.
Right. And for those who don't know, they had quite the rivalry in college.
Absolutely.
So they're facing off for the first time at the next level.
Yeah. And so, and for those that don't know, Indiana has a WNBA basketball team called the Fever. We didn't know that until like 2 months ago when Caitlin was drafted to them.
The reason
we know.
And so, and they get the first pick because they're a terrible team. And that's how it works in NBA and most sports is, you know, the worst record you have, the higher draft pick you get because they want to try to even out the teams. So they get Caitlin Clark as a number one draft pick, and Chicago Sky gets Angel Reese as a number seven draft pick.
And in that game, Caitlin Clark was body checked by one of the players on Chicago's team. And it was
Kennedy Carter.
It wasn't even in play, you know. So we're going to play this clip. This is how The View sees it. Well, at least Sunny Hostin on The View.
And Whoopi. We got Whoopi in there.
Is bringing this money, these sponsorships, we hope, into the league, and other players will benefit from it. But I do think that she is more relatable to more people because she's white, because she's attractive. And unfortunately, there still is that stigma of against the LGBTQ plus community. 70% of the WNBA is black. A third of the players are in the LGBTQ plus community. And we have to do something about that stigma in this country. I think that people have a problem with basketball playing women that are lesbian.
Okay, so here's something
Caitlin Clark is bringing this money.
the first thing that stands out to me, and Martine, I want to get your take on this. So, do you think there's a stigma in professional basketball because the players are majority black?
I don't think there's a stigma for that. I mean, it's predominantly a black game, because even if you look at NBA, like, most of the players are African American, so it's not a stigma against it. It'd be like the other way around. If anything, you can say there's a stigma against like white people on there because there's such a fewer minority.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting of her to say. We've got to get rid of this stigma because there's 70% black in the WNBA. And there's a stigma because of that. I'm like, what are you talking about? My hero in NBA, Larry Bird, John Stockton, they stood out very staunchly. They weren't my heroes growing up as a kid. I knew that they stood out as good players, but predominantly my heroes were, you know, the Scottie Pippins and Michael Jordans out there, and I could care less what color they were. They were just amazing players. So the fact that they would say, we gotta get rid of the stigma because there's a majority black player.
not just the majority, overwhelming 70%, according to her stats. I don't know where she gets these stats.
And nobody is alleging that it's racist, right? That this is a racist geared type of franchise or organization.
I think the proposal is that because Caitlin Clark is white, she's getting a lot more media attention, and the big sponsorships are bringing money to the WNBA, which is, I don't know why that's a bad thing, and I don't know why the WNBA is not supporting Caitlin. She's bringing in crowds like the WNBA has never seen before. She's bringing in money like the WNBA has never seen before, and she's not getting any love for it. She's being hated on because of it, and we're to believe it's because of her race or because she's white. I take issue with that.
Yeah. Do you think, Martine, how much do you know about Caitlin Clark before 2 days ago?
I knew a little bit about her because at the gym they would always have WNBA games playing. So when I'm on the treadmill, I'll just watch it because it's pretty interesting. But I mean, I kind of understand what she's saying about that, about how there's all this money coming into the WNBA. And that's why she said it kind of sucks seeing that Caitlin Clark's getting all of these sponsorships and everything because she is white, because she is, you know, like a straight person. It's basically she's saying that Caitlin Clark is a more marketable and more palatable player to the general masses than, like, let's say, like an Angel Reese, you know, who's a black woman in the WNBA. Like, I understand what she meant by that. I don't agree with her.
I'll tell you what, if Angel Reese had the stats that Caitlin Clark had, and had the humility too, because when Caitlin Clark plays in her after game interviews, she's very graceful. She's very humble. She says it how it is. She doesn't mince words, but she doesn't go after any of the players. She recognizes the game for what it is. People get competitive. They get rough. Sometimes there's fouls that are uncalled for, but she doesn't go after anybody else. Where Angel Reese, she's known for getting, you know, down in the dirt and just getting brutal.
I think Angel Reese is like one of those people that just lets the game really get to them, like on a deep level, like to that game is like something that's bringing her like an income, and it's like probably like helping her family or whatever, and like it's helping her get through college and giving her all these opportunities. So I can understand why she might take it to heart more than like somebody else, you know, who can separate the game from, like, you know, like after interview, like I understand both sides of it.
So Angel Reese's family is impoverished?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, like,
or is less well to do than Caitlin Clark.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, like, as a person who probably doesn't have.
It sounds like that though when you say Angel Reese. She's more aggressive because she needs to do it to put food on the table, whereas Caitlin Clark's just doing it as a pastime.
That's not what
I said. White and rich.
I said that Angel Reese is able to separate game from after. Like the after commentary. So like maybe she just lets the game like completely take over her like life. I didn't say that Angel Reese doesn't have the ability to put foods on the table. I just said that she like just let the game get to her.
So she does let the game get to her. And she, now there's been plenty of bad, I don't know, the bad boy player, you know, who was, I forget the name of that guy, the Birdman.
Birdman.
What was his real name?
I don't know. It's Birdman.
Yeah, Birdman. But anyways, he's a white dude, and he was a really, you know, aggressive player. He was one of the defensive leaders in the NBA.
Chris Anderson.
Okay, Chris Anderson. And I don't think anybody would say, well, he's doing this because he's got to support his family. So let's get to that. It's the white privilege statement that Sonny brings up.
We haven't played that yet.
Oh, we haven't?
It wasn't in that clip, yeah.
Okay, let's take a break and let's play that clip.
Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hansen is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today. Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hansen is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today. Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. Thanks for tuning in again. We are in the studio today with Sean Garner. We've got Tom Sparks, Martine, and we've got Cody and myself, Adam Hansen. And we've been talking heavily about this phenomenon that we are seeing currently in the WNBA. Yes, it's still going. And yes, there are still women playing in the WNBA, one of which is Caitlin Clark, who has really brought on the viewership as of late within the last couple of months. She's fresh off the heels of graduating from Iowa and being in the NCAA tournament multiple years there and just making a name for herself and the sport among women. Well, she was drafted to the Indiana Fever recently, about a month and a half ago, and she's been starting her WNBA career, shattering records. She's one of two players that have amounted, I think it's 150 points in 10 games or less.
In her first 10 games.
Yeah. And so she's just shattering records. And last segment I talked about, she's, if you haven't seen her, I would encourage you to go onto YouTube and just search her name and watch clips. She's just a joy to watch. It's fun when she gets the ball. Not that she's flamboyant or anything like that. It's just fun to watch what she's going to do, how she dishes it off, how she shoots. She shoots from downtown a lot, and she just drains it. But it seems like most of the time she's successful and when she gets that ball, and it's fun to watch. And so the contention now in the media is that, well, it's because she's white that she's bringing all this attention to the WNBA and to sponsorships that she's just accruing in mass because of her white privilege and popularity. In fact,
which is so interesting because it couldn't be more opposite, right? She holds every distinct record in the NCAAs before she just moved over. She's only played a dozen or so games in the WNBA, and in her first 10 games, she made, you know, history in a lot of them. But the media coverage is downplaying that. For example, I've got rankings from three different media outlets, one from ESPN, one from USA, one from USA Today, one from CBS. They all have Angel Reese ranked higher as a rookie than Caitlin Clark. So let's read some stats here. We got Angel Reese. What it says is she's really good at offensive rebounds. She averages, and they picked, and I don't know why they would do this, but they cherry-picked her best seven games for her stats and said that she averaged 10.6 points per game in those seven games and 8.9 rebounds. And then they go to Caitlin Clark, and they gave her first 10 games without cherry-picking any of them, 1 to 10 right in a row, and says, okay, yeah, she's got 150 points in the first 10 games. She also got 50 rebounds in her first 10 games, 50 assists in her first 10 games. These are statistics. This isn't I don't want to say white and black, but it literally is. I don't understand how everybody is saying she's getting favoritism because of her race, because of her sexual orientation, when the stats are astoundingly above, head and shoulders above the other players. She's getting ranked below them on the official rankings, but when the sponsorships come in, she's hammering it. So the WNBA, the most you can make in the WNBA, any guesses out there? Throw out a guess, Martin. What do you think? What do you think the highest salary is in the WNBA?
Probably a couple hundred thousand, but under a million.
Well, that's pretty good. It's $250,000.
There you go, Martin.
Nice job. So it's $250,000. Do you know how much Caitlin Clark is going to bring in this year with her sponsorships?
$1 million?
$28 million.
No, wow.
$28 million.
Must be nice.
I don't think the sponsors are saying, you know what? We like white people better. I don't think that's happening. I think they're saying we like winners. We like people that generate viewership. But let's see what The View has to say. Again, go back to The View, and you know that's our real source of authority.
So the question is Caitlin Clark's success because of her race and sexual orientation?
Her white privilege.
Her white privilege, her pretty privilege, or is it because of her capabilities and the things that she's doing on the court? Let's see.
I do think that there is a thing called pretty privilege. There is a thing called white privilege. There is a thing called tall privilege. But I do think that she is more relatable to more people because she's white, because she's attractive.
Unbelievable. Here with the reaction, Fox and Friends.
What do you think about that, Sean?
You know, Whoopi Goldberg, for as much as I despise her views most of the time, I think she had a pretty good response. Do you have that queued up?
She holds a single season 3-point record for women. She's the Big Ten's all-time leader in assists. Now listen, you know, when people say stuff like that, that's like people saying, oh, you only got into this Ivy League college because you're black, or you only got this because of this. This girl earned this. I'm sorry. You know, there are great players, but nobody else has done this, so I'm not mad that they gave her basketball.
Okay, and what about Charles Barkley? You know, I don't agree with him in politics whatsoever, but he generally calls it as he sees it. I disagree with his opinions when it gets outside of basketball most of the time, but for basketball, I love it when they call it as they see it. LeBron James, same way. LeBron James, I hate his politics. But he says the same thing. He's like, Caitlin Clark is bringing a lot of eyes to the WNBA because she's an amazing player. I've been watching her for a long time. She's a great player. And I don't know why everybody's upset that now they're flying on private jets and getting all these endorsements because people want to watch a great player perform on the floor.
Well, that's what this is about. I think they're just trying to ride those coattails. You know, if somebody's doing well, get your name in the headline with them.
Here's the thing. There's so many media outlets and the players themselves that are just really hating on Caitlin Clark. You would think that they would do the opposite. They would say, yes, let's go. Let's ride this tide. But they're not. They're saying she's overhyped. You know, she's only getting this because some other reason besides her actual performance. And then they're assigning it too. And they're bringing in this is the thing that I hate the most. And the reason that we're bringing this up at all is because I think it's the canary in the coal mine. It's what our society focuses on. And it's always got to be about race. It's always got to be sexual orientation. It's always got to be some type of minority flag out there that has to be waved in order for this to get any type of commentary from the political talking heads. And I think it's ridiculous.
No, I take issue with that. So you said it's what our society focuses on. I disagree with that. In fact, it's the opposite. It's not what our society focuses on, or else that wouldn't be the topic of discussion. It's what the media is bringing to this and labeling it as. But in reality, us as general public, we don't see that. We like Caitlin Clark because of the way she plays. We don't see her whiteness or her sexual orientation. We don't care about any of that. We just love to watch her play basketball.
I would have no clue about her sexual orientation.
Yeah, that's what society sees.
Bringing it up over and over again.
But the media wants us to pretend that it's because of these things and these labels that they're putting on to people. And us, most of the time, are just going about our daily business, talking with people and interacting with people because we care about others and we want them to do good. We want to do good, and we don't really care about your race or your gender or anything like that. We just want to live our lives and be happy. And I think that's why I take issue with what you said. You said, well, society wants you to believe this. It's not society. This is media. They're labeling people.
Yeah.
And it's not, in reality, this is not happening.
Okay, so it's my pushback against the media because they keep force feeding us this information and as if it should be what we should be taking in consideration. But it's not relevant. We don't want it anymore.
Going back to that Sunny Hostin clip, she talked about 70% of the WNBAs is black. She said...
I'm surprised it's that small a number.
One-third of the WNBA identifies as... what is it, Martine?
LGBTQA+.
Plus, yeah. One-third. When I heard that stat, I wondered, where are you getting that? Because on this show a couple weeks ago, we talked about if you did a poll among us as to generally in America, how many people are identifying as LGBTQ? Everybody said like overwhelming, like
20%, 30%.
I think it was a lot higher than that. In reality, it's like
3%.
If that. And so according to her stats, she's saying, oh, no, one-third of the WNBA is... That's 33% of WNBA identifies as that. I don't understand how that can be. Like, statistically, it can't be.
Well,
unless they all concentrate to the WNBA.
Well, and I don't know.
Possible.
I think it can be that way. In fact, I think they might be underrepresented for the WNBA because... I don't know.
Where do you get that stat? I mean, when I get drafted to WNBA, is it on a form that I fill out? Do you identify as LGBTQ XRYZ? Why, yes, I do. Does it give me sponsorship? Yes, I do.
Yes, and I wonder if they have the same stat for the NBA, right? Or any other professional, like, you know, the NFL. Go ahead, Martine.
I just think it's a little... for men to be seen as part of the LGBTQIA community, it's hardly ever seen in like professional sports. But like women, especially like in this kind of field, like, you know, it's like typical like stereotype of just being like, oh yeah, like they're gonna be lesbian or whatever. And like to you guys might not like see that, but like it's kind of like, oh, like this tall athletic woman is like pretty butch, you know, like, and that's a term for used for like lesbians. But to me, like, it's just kind of like, well, like duh, like you don't see like men in the NBA that are like, or like in any sports period, because it's just not, it's bad when a guy is gay, but like when a woman does it, it's okay. And it's like been seen over time about that.
I don't know. That is an epiphany to me, that it's bad if somebody in a professional sport is gay. I actually have no inclination to think about their sexual orientation when I see a person play a sport. Mm-hmm. When I look at this, and it seems like it's force-fed on us, just like Adam is saying, it's not what society is constantly thinking. It's what the media is constantly pushing. Okay, this person is successful. Let's trace back what their sexual orientation is, and let's focus on that issue. Why? What does that have to do at all with their performance? Unless... it's transgender, and the person was a man the year before, and now they're killing it in women's sports, I could see that that's a relevant point. If they're breaking records that will never be broken again by biological females, you know, they're the Leah Clarks of the sport, and they are doing these things, then I could say, okay, well, then that might come into play here a little bit because there is a argument that that's an unfair advantage. But I don't, for any other reason, I can't see why their sexual orientation is relevant at all to their performance on the court.
Yeah, I think that I see a world where it could be a little bit of both. Like, for example, growing up, no secret, I'm far below 6 feet tall. For people who haven't met me in person, I'm about 5'6", okay? My heroes in sports were always the little guy. I loved Muggsy Bogues. Spud Webb in the dunk competition against Dominique Wilkins, right? I love Darren Sproles in the NFL. And I think there's something to be said about people liking somebody they can identify with. And I think maybe that's part of what Sonny Hostin was trying to say, albeit maybe in a poor way, is that if you see, we have other examples of this. You have Tiger Woods in golf, phenom, greatest of all time to do it, also happened to be a black man in a predominantly white man's sport. You had James Bubba Stewart in motocross, only black man to do it for a long time in the motocross, best there ever was. And you have Simone Biles, in a traditionally white sport in gymnastics who's a black girl.
But what did all those things have in common?
They're all great, which is the number one thing is that they have to be great.
Not just great. They broke every standard.
Well, Muggsy Bogues and like the short aspect, not so much. But I agree with you that to finish my point, the most important thing is you have to be worthy of emulation. You have to be great. No one wants to watch a loser. But I think that there can be a little bit on the side of people like who they look like or who they identify with,
sure,
as like extra, I guess, frosting on the cake.
But
so
I
speak.
Think, you know, with most of those cases, mm-hmm, the people not only for their achievements were recognized, but then they were recognized for breaking barriers and given a little bit even more extra attention. I think that, mm-hmm, for Tiger Woods, for Simone Biles, for those other athletes, they were not just the best at the time. They were probably the best of all time. And they were black and the first to do it. And so everybody rushed to them, and they got sponsorships that were far above and beyond what would normally occur for that type of athlete in their position. So to reverse it, now we're coming back the other way. It's like, okay, Caitlin Clark's getting this. Is it because she's a minority in her sport? And the answer could be, yeah, she's a minority in her sport, so we're now looking at somebody that stands out in a sport. But the point that the media is saying is, no, it's because of her white privilege. And that's where I take issue. I say, this, it's absolutely not because she's white. She's not being flocked to because she's white. That has nothing to do with it. It's not because she's pretty, because I'll just come out and say it, Angel Reese is head and shoulders prettier than she is. Angel Reese could be a supermodel. If I passed Caitlin Clark in the mall, I wouldn't turn my head.
She'd be pretty tall.
Is she tall?
She's 6'3", I think.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I thought she was under 6 feet.
Oh, I don't know. You know what? Angel Reese is 6'3". I don't know how Caitlin Clark is.
Well, fact check
that. She's 6'1".
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Angel Reese is a power forward.
Yeah.
So, but still,
and that's the thing.
Taller than your average woman, for sure.
Yeah. Statistically, I mean, Angel Reese is just not going to stack up, probably because they play different roles.
That's true.
Angel Reese is a lot taller. She's down underneath the basket. She's a power forward. She does not – she touches the ball, but, I mean, not as much as Caitlin Clark is going to, because she's the point guard. She's the quarterback. She's running – these plays, she's taking it inbound. So she's going to have a lot more touches on the ball and the opportunity to make things happen a lot more than an Angel Reese. So statistically, I can see where Caitlin's going to be far above Angel, not because they're necessarily one's better than the other. They have different roles, and that plays into the statistics. Angel can get, she does rebounding incredibly well, more so than Caitlin, and that has to do with their size.
Actually, no, not statistically. She doesn't get more rebounds.
Hmm.
She did the last game.
The very last game, the cherry-picked games. But of the first 10 games, actually, Caitlin Clark got more. But nonetheless, so why are we even talking about this? Why are we even talking about WNBA stats? We're talking about it because the underlying issue that's going on here, that we have to bring in, apparently, race and sexual orientation to every talking point, and when it comes out to the general media. And it's nauseating. It's to me, it's disgusting. It really takes away from anybody else and their true identity for who they want to be and who they are. And it artificially says, you need to identify with these groups in order for you to display to the world who you are. And I think that has nothing to do with it. I am not anybody special because I'm a white male. I am a human being, and I'm going to contribute to society the best way that I can. It's not going to be on the basketball floor, but right, I'm going to do my thing. And Thomas, you're a Marine. Adam, you're a father of 6 kids. Cody, you got a couple pugs.
Yeah.
Martine, you're a whiz with media and putting together not only ad campaigns. You're only 19 years old, and you're one of the best. Marketing managers that this firm has had. and you're 19 years old. That is what we should be talking about. It doesn't matter the rest of it. It might matter to you, and that's great. Take it home, embrace it. But to the world, that doesn't matter. And we gotta flip the script on what is being talked about in the world and keep the race and anything that may have happened in the past with the cultures, all those wars, out of the discussion. That's what I'm tired of. I want Caitlin Clark to succeed. The WNBA, if it does or doesn't, I quite honestly could care less. But I just want them to stop talking about sexual orientation and race every single time something happens.
Yeah.
But that's what pushes the story, and that's what gets clicks, and that's what gets, you know, attention. And that's what they're trying to do. I mean, I'm more upset that they're gaslighting us, trying to tell us Caitlin Clark is beautiful.
And that was the comment I was going to make. I was going to go to Cody because I think he's nailing it on the head. Basically, what The View is doing is they're riding off of Caitlin's coattails. She is so popular, and she's getting so many views. I think the women of The View are like, oh, let's jump on this bandwagon, because nobody's watching The View. Nobody cares about The View. Everybody pretty much despises it and those women and their opinions. But this is a way for them to become sort of relevant for a minute. But it'll go away.
And keep our society divided.
Well,
you know?
And that's the thing. It sows contention.
Yeah.
And that's the big problem here, because there's a lot of different political beliefs in this room. And we work together. We get along very well together. And in fact, I go out in the world, and I would say when I go up to Phoenix, now I go to Tucson, now I am a very conservative person. And I'm very stout, religious, Christian. And that is not the predominant feature of the attorneys that I mingle with when I go to Tucson and Phoenix. And Adam, you've seen that too, that our conservative values are not embraced, or at least they're not pushed to the forefront of the talking points when we go up there. And it's okay. I want to just talk about the law. And the thing about it here is we get along on 9 points out of 10, even when you take out those aspects, right? So why is our country focusing on the things that divide us so much instead of focusing on what can push us forward and unite us?
We'll talk about that when we come back. We've got to take a break. This is Life, Death, and the Law. Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hansen is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today. Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hansen is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today. Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen. We're in the studio today with, we've got Sean Garner, we've got Tom Sparks, we've got Martine and Cody, all of us chatting about, to this point, Caitlin Clark and the phenomenon that she is causing in the WNBA, getting a lot of eyes onto that organization and the games that are going forth. Yes, it still exists. Yes, the WNBA still is around, and we know that because Caitlin was just recently drafted into it, and so now we're watching. And she's done a good job bringing eyes to the WNBA and money. She brings a lot of sponsorship money. People are watching that. And we've been talking recently, or these last couple segments, about that phenomenon and whether or not it's because of the way that she plays, her talent, or is it because of her white privilege or some other...
Her pretty privilege.
Privilege that... Yeah, so some other exterior reason that we are all interested in this. That's what the media wants us to kind of focus on. And Cody hit it on the head. He said that really these media organizations are jumping on her coattails. They know that she's popular, and so this is a way for them to become kind of relevant for a minute because they're mentioning her name. It's going to get them clicks. It's going to get them views, where we talked about the ladies on The View brought this topic up on their panel, and nobody watches The View until they say something like this or bring up Caitlin Clark that everybody is kind of already watching and interested in. And that was the reason for it. You know, everything has a purpose. This is this driving purpose of getting some sort of relevance. And that's not historically, that's not unknown. This is a common thing for media organizations to do. Ben Franklin was known for making his own newspaper and creating salacious, probably erroneous articles that have now been, you know, debunked, but he didn't care. He owned the newspaper. He could write whatever he wanted. And this was all to drive towards his political opponents and make, you know, make them just slandered in his paper. It's not a new concept for media organizations to bend and twist things in order to feed their machine, which is, we need more money. We need more subscribers to pay us money to pay our staff, to feed our families. And so they're going to use methods. You might not think it's the most ethical, but that is, that has been happening since the history of our beautiful nation. That is in its fabric, is kind of media doing its own thing in order to gain profits, in order to feed its staff members. And so you've always got to, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, obviously, but I think you've always got to look at media outlets and the story that they're giving you with a little bit of skepticism and fact-checking. You want to go and do your own research. I would rather them just tell me, this happened today at 11 o'clock in Yuma. This motorcycle rear-ended this car on 32nd Street. I don't need them to tell me, at 11 o'clock yesterday, this motorcycle, who was black, this guy was black on this motorcycle, driving erratically and popping wheelies. And I'm pretty sure he belonged to the LGBTQRS.
And he grew up in the hood.
Yeah, oppression. And because of that, he needs to have justice served, and he needs to have all this stuff. I don't need that in my editorial. Just give me the facts. I can do the rest. I can do my own research. So my tangent here is such that when you're getting media, you just have to understand they have a motive. It's not pure. It's not, here's the information, you do what you will with it or come to your own conclusions. Here's the narrative I'm going to give to you because I'm driving, my driving force is to have you come back to me over and over and over again so that I gain more popularity, so that I gain more income, so that I can feed my family more and enrich myself. That's really what this is about, in my opinion.
Okay.
So any qualms with that?
Yeah, I totally
Mr. Garner?
Totally disagree with what just the very last point that you made, that you are doing this show because you want to get more likes, that you want to get more listeners, because you want to make more money, because we don't make any money on this show. And I don't think people like us more because of the show. I think we say what needs to be said because the world right now is spiraling down and into hostilities and war and division among our country and tribalism. And I think that's a terrible thing. And what we want to do is we want to say that there's a lot of good out there still, and what the media is publishing is salacious. It is just these headlines to grab attention, but there are a lot of good things, and we want to bring back some sensibility and credibility to news out there. And we talk about what actually affects Americans, and especially people in our community on a daily basis, that is not being talked about on the national headlines. In fact, we it's our mantra that we talk about the 1% that actually affects us big time here in our community. And we don't try to put a spin on it. In fact, that's why we want to have like dissenting voices. We consistently ask for other people with differing opinions to come in. Oftentimes we get declined from those invitations. But we want to talk about it in a way that is real and that can provide that silver line that says this is what's going on, and this is how we can move the ball forward in a good way for the community. Do you disagree with that?
No, I wasn't. When I made my comment, I did not lump us into that as far as media is concerned. I actually forgot that, I guess,
We are.
This is a show and people listen to it. I don't consider myself media. And that's the thing. Is like, it's kind of like we're those politicians that we love that aren't politicians because they're from the outside world, you know? That's how I view it. I don't view myself as a media person. I have no idea about media or news. You know, we don't. We're just talking here. That's why I didn't lump myself in there. But I thank you for making me understand that we actually are creating media content, and some people listen to it. I was in church last weekend, and a gal turned to me and she says, "Oh, I love your show." I'm like, "Oh, you listen?"
It's like, I know. It's always surprising to me, too.
Exactly. It never dawned on me that somebody actually listens to what we're saying. And I thought to myself, maybe I should pay attention or make carefully word what I say instead of just like off the cuff.
But you know, that's the beauty of like having you on the show, because I guard a little bit more the words that I say, because I don't want to be offensive. I want to be accurate, but I don't want to be offensive. But you're a little bit more spontaneous, and you'll say exactly what comes off the top of your head, and I like it, because that we need that type of voice, and we need to get back to that type of reality. That's what comedy does. Cody, you're a comedian, and it points out what's 90% accurate and then throws a little pun in there and puts a comedic spin on it. And a lot of us can take a serious topic and we can make it light because of comedy, right?
That's how you get away with it.
That's how you
get away. That's the only way you can get away with it.
And we're starting to like suppress even the comedians. And saying, even as a comedian, you can't say that.
Look at how they've came after Dave Chappelle year after year. And he's basically been saying the same thing, I mean, years ago, about what we've been talking about today.
Yeah.
You know, like if your performance on the court excels, then there really shouldn't be an issue.
And I love that about comedy, but I think it should be more in our everyday conversation, that we can talk about these things, we can say our true opinions, and even allow ourselves to be persuaded to change our opinions. And be politically incorrect without being demonized and villainized and cast out with this Scarlet A or whatever the current version of the villain is today.
I agree with that. And so even on this last segment, you corrected me as far as rebounding from Angel and Caitlin and those stats. I don't take that personally. You know, I just talk what's in my head most of the time. Is it nice? Is it pretty all the time? No, but it is what I'm thinking. Does it mean it's right? No. And this is a conversation I have with my wife these last 17 years of our marriage, because I have a tendency to really offend her sometimes when I just speak my mind. But it doesn't mean, like I tell her, it doesn't mean that I'm right. But me getting it out there, at least now you know what I'm thinking. And you can put me in my place, or we can come to an agreement that I'm actually wrong. And I'll admit that if you can point out to me, but I would have never known had I not said that. And you wouldn't have been. The hope is that you're not offended. I don't mean to offend. I don't want to offend anybody. I'm just saying what I'm thinking. But now it's out there. And that's really what I think the driving force of our founders was when they included the freedom of our speech. It's not only nice, polite speech is protected. It's all speech.
Yeah.
All speech is a God-given right. I have the right to say whatever I want. And it might be incredibly hateful. It might be wrong. It might be insidious. But I have a right to say it. And you have a right to react the way that you do and say something back to me. You can correct me. You can, you know, grin and take it. You have all sorts of options, but I need to be able to say what I want. That way we know where we're at in our relationship and in this conversation. It doesn't mean that I'm right. I can say whatever I want, but it doesn't mean it's right. But I think if it's not out there, then we can't drive to the truth. You have to have that concept out. Whatever I'm thinking in my mind, I need to get it out. You need to hear it. And once you hear it and we talk it out, we're going to find ultimately in that conversation, we'll probably get to some sort of principles of truth that are everlasting over generations of time. But it takes maybe an uncomfortable moment or offending somebody because they're saying what we are perceiving to be true.
Yeah, and every generation is known for what they contribute to society. Right now, our generation, I think what we need to be known for after the snowflakes have made their imprint on society, which is you can't say anything that might hurt my feelings, we need to push back and say, yes, you do need to have your feelings hurt because it's going to allow you to see both sides of the story. You are focused in 100% on you. One of the most popular and newly added words to the dictionary is selfie. And I think that defines where we were heading in society is we're so self-centered and selfish that we can't allow any, not only are we thinking about ourselves all the time, but we want to impose upon others restrictions that will not allow them to offend us. And Martine, I'd like to get your take on this because you are in that generation. And what is your opinion of not only allowing, but encouraging open discourse that is uncomfortable and even at times offensive in order to get at the truth and have enlightenment be a more potential of the end goal?
So basically, I really do appreciate free speech, and I'm honestly really grateful that I live in the United States because it's like, you know, like you can say whatever you want. But I feel
can
like
you my, do you feel like that? Can you say what? Can I say whatever I want?
You absolutely can. You just gotta deal with backlash from getting it. But no one's stopping you from saying what you want. You just, you know, there might be repercussions to what you say if you say like hate speech or if you come after a certain minority or whatever other group. But I just feel that my generation is advocating more for the people that, you know, have been silenced in years or have been, you know, primarily targeted against. And it's more of a time where it's like, all right, everybody in the past has had their time to say whatever they want without repercussions. So now it's time to like, you know, like look out for the small guy or like look out for the people that haven't had a chance to say what they wanted in past years. I just think it's like a group of numbers type of thing where like if a community can agree to not speak on something, then like if a community of people can agree that they won't talk about something for the benefit of another, then that's what is a general okay.
Okay, so what I heard you say was yes, but then the qualification brought it all the way back to no. If a community can agree not to say something, if it's offensive, then that would be better?
Well, I was just referring to the snowflakes, as you called it, you know, the people that are so delicate where you can't say anything. I personally think that free speech is fine, but I feel that my generation as a whole and what's majority put out there is just deciding that, you know, like, hey, like you can say what you want, but like try and keep it nice. It's like that. Everybody always throws around like that. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say it. I think that's what's the motto.
Around the dinner table, maybe that's a good motto. But in public and for the enlightenment of society, there's a different standard. So for you, let's say that you are the guest speaker and there's a gymnasium of your peers, okay? What would you say to motivate them to bring our country together and allow ideas to not only percolate but to develop into something that's going to not only bring us together but allow the best to rise to the top? The best, not those that are in historically repressed societies or organizations, but the best.
I'd probably just say it like that, just keep it flat, like the best will rise and we're not looking at anything else. And I think that typically people, whenever they hear that, like where it's like it's a competition of the best or it's a competition of that, they always think immediately like, well, there's something else to it, like it's not just the best, because people automatically think of themselves as the best. But I would just keep it like, if I had to motivate people, I'd like throw in like my little like slang in there and like, you know, things that my generation understands, and just say that in at least my generation's terms, that the best will rise and that's all we're looking for, like nothing else, nothing of your characteristics. Like if you want a blank sheet of paper, we're just looking at statistics.
So your position here in the firm, right, you're the youngest kid to have the position that you have, and that is the manager of our advertising. And if I were to tell you the reason that you have that is because of your ethnicity or your sexual orientation or anything else besides your actual performance, how would you take that?
A compliment, because I'm not bottom of the barrel. Not really just saying it like that.
No. Okay, let me rephrase this. So if I were to tell you that you don't hold your position because your merits, you hold your permission because you're a DEI hire, how would you take that?
I'd still take it as a compliment. I mean, it's benefiting me. It's nothing hurting me. If it was hurting me, then I'd be like, well, let's actually look at the statistics because I can do X, Y, Z when other person can't even do X, you know? Uh-huh. Then I take it like that. But in this situation, it's
a
plus.
So if I had a college graduate that was white, straight, Christian, and shared the same religious beliefs as I did, and I said, I hired you over them mm-hmm. because of your diversity, not because of what they're going to bring to the firm as far as advertising potential, but because you are diverse and they are not. You take that as a compliment.
Yeah, because it's benefiting me.
I think that's the problem. And I'll tell you straight, I would never do that. And that's not why you're here. It has nothing to do with your person, like who you are outside the firm. It has everything to do with what you can bring to the firm. And I would want you to move forward and acknowledge that you can go toe-to-toe with anybody else out there, regardless of what your preferences are, what your race is, and what your background is. You are talented, and I want you to focus on that and put in the background your identifying characteristics.
No, yeah, sorry. I know we need to cut and, you know, say goodbye, but last thing. No, I absolutely, like, do think of that. Like, I don't think of myself as, like, who I identify as or who I have a preference in, like, partners or anything like that, or, like, even my ethnicity for that. I think of myself as, like, me as a person. What am I capable of that's not, you know, like, anything genetic, anything, whatever it might be. I just automatically think of myself, like, how do I compete with others in, like, the field that I'm in? I don't ever think of it like, oh, me as a Hispanic doing this. Like, no, like, not even, like, me graduating high school. I wasn't like, oh, I'm a Hispanic high school graduate. I come from a Mexican family. I was a high school graduate. It was never, like, a identifier.
That's all the time we have for today. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.